Hi, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Chess, and today we are talking about intimate friendships. But as always, I have with me my regular co-host.
Hi, I'm the hetero life mate, Tech.
And his intimate friend, who is often on this podcast.
Oh, God, that was good. Hi, it's me. It's Jason again.
And one of my very dear friends who, while we may have never met in person, we speak daily.
Yes!
Please introduce yourself, guest.
I am Miss Melissa, the bathtub mermaid.
Woo! Jason is so excited to be able to podcast with you.
Contain yourself, Jason.
Jason
contain
makes
yourself.
Me feel so popular.
She's Big Daddy's favorite.
And so today we're talking about intimate friendships, and this actually came from a conversation that Melissa and I were having, where we were talking about how too often shows and TV and movies, they try to jam romantic relationships.
Star Wars.
Where there doesn't need to be one.
Star Wars.
You're the only girl in the galaxy. We must be in love.
Exactly.
Sister!
But so often, you know, there are intimate friendships and intimate relationships that are not romantic that can be either as strong or often even stronger than romantic relationships. And I just want to start with one of the ones that started Melissa and I out, and that would be from TNG, Geordi and Data. Because there's a lot of slash fiction about Geordi and Data, isn't there?
He is versed in various techniques.
We have no problem with slash fiction. Valid art form. We like it when it's well written.
Yes. And honestly, if you'd like to change characters and have relationships, I mean, we're going to eventually, I've been wanting to do this since we started the podcast. Eventually, we are going to have a slash fiction or a slash episode of Nutty Bites, where we're going to get into the nitty gritty of slash. Yes, oh, I want you on.
Can I just yowie it up? Can I just get all the yowie?
You want yowie everywhere. Yes. But there's lots of like reasons behind slash, but there's so much slash about Geordi and Data. And it's kind of annoying, and not, again, you can do whatever you want in slash, but because Melissa and I were talking about how what Geordi and Data have is so much more pure than a romance or
making
even a
romance. Partners diminishes the really sweet, pure friendship that they already have.
Exactly.
And, yeah. And I, you know, but to give them credit, which is a thing I picked up when I went back and rewatched a lot of TNG, Geordi never has a romantic anything.
That's not true.
He has a hologram.
He had sex with Akiya.
Yes, but he's never like Riker gets.
He has no long-lasting relationship.
Yeah.
But Geordi is the worst boss in all of TNG because there's only two things we see him the relationships he has with his subordinates. If you're a girl, he's macking on you, and if you're a guy, he just ignores you and sends you into the Jefferies tubes to be killed by a plasma storm or something.
Yeah.
So,
And even if you're a girl and he's not interested, he doesn't know how to communicate with you.
No, because he's always got the hand on the shoulder, and he's always got the soft little voice and the little smile and the... Kunta Kinte is pretty dreamy, but he's really pervy when it comes to him as a boss.
Yeah.
And...
to be fair, I've met LeVar Burton. He also does have that naturally soft voice. Like he's just
he really does. Yeah. He's very sweet and mild spoken.
Hey, we're talking to a guy who grew up watching like every episode of Reading Rainbow. Trust me. It doesn't mean I don't like LeVar Burton. I really do like LeVar Burton. I'm a huge fan. But Geordi, yeah. Geordi's a creep.
Yeah, LeVar's got game. Geordi's got no game.
Negative game.
Exactly. He has negative game. Whereas,
every time you touch my engines, you're touching me. Oh, Geordi. Oh, Geordi.
But Data's got game. Data's got serious game because he's had...
He bangs Tasha.
He's had canon relationships. And it was more than just banging Tasha. That was a relationship
because... We were intimate.
Yeah, well, and it's brought up as proof of his sentience.
It was a defining moment for him.
Yeah.
Although I'm very sad they did not bring up that in when she died in the show.
Like, there's a cut scene where they did.
Gotta look that up.
A cut line in her goodbye speech where she looks at him and says, "Oh, and Data, it happened." And if you watch the episode, you can see Geordi give Data a look, even though the line isn't there. His response to it is.
Oh, nice. Very nice. I'll have to go check that out. But yeah, so,
also,
you know,
in the original script of the episode, Ensigns of Command, he actually had sex with R.J. McKenzie.
Oh, all right. Well, go. Like I said, Data's got game, and making Geordi and Data a romantic pairing kind of negates all of, not negates all of, but I mean, it kind of ignores the fact that Data does have romantic relationships. And it negates what is essential between these two people, that they need each other. Data makes Geordi a better person socially, which is funny. and Geordi makes Data better because they're able to express this kind of love that is safe for each other. And I think that is beautiful.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because they have one of the best relationships on that show, and it's between a guy who has difficulty making social connections and a synthetic life form.
Like, who has no emotions whatsoever.
Thank you for phrasing it that way. That is exactly, yes, exactly. Who keeps insisting he has no emotions, yet he has connections.
they just hadn't made that emotion chip just yet. It was on its way.
So what are some other intimate friendships that you guys can think of that sometimes people push the boundaries and make it romance when it shouldn't be?
All right. So I'll go ahead with mine because it's the basis for the friendship between Jason and I. And that would be from Scrubs, the relationship between Turk and JD.
Yeah. Sky love. It's not romantic at all.
No, but they push that joke in more than one episode where they did the whole song of guy love.
Yeah.
And they would do it as like a quasi, you know, romantic pairing. These two guys are way too comfortable with each other. But at its core, it's nothing but a very close friendship from two guys that are peers, that are classmates, that are best friends who share everything together, maybe a little too much.
Comfortable.
Mm? Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things that defines a lot of these relationships, that these people have set up such tight and strong bonds that they're absolutely comfortable with one another. Like, there's no hiding anything about themselves from the other person.
Yeah, they can expose that raw emotion that maybe they're not comfortable doing with, say, some romantic partners. I'm going to take, add on to Turk and JD. I mean, JD is so much more open with Turk than he is with Elliot. And Turk is always, having to talk to JD before he can really establish his feelings about Carla before he even talks to Carla.
And how many times in that show do you find, their relationships are on the rocks? And they console each other, or they end up, like crashing on each other's couch, or they're like living with each other again, or
yeah, that to each other, their home.
Right. And the slash fiction just writes itself.
Yeah, it does. It does. But, I'm not going to say that I've ever looked up Turk and JD, to tell you the truth. that's not where I'm going to go.
Carla and Elliot. I have it favorited. No.
So Jason, what's a good pairing for you?
I'm sitting here, I'm trying to dig deep here, because the concept behind this is taken to an insane extreme in anime, right? Like, prime example, one of Jen's favorite shows and also one of her best friend's favorite shows is Black Butler. And it is literally the story of a master and his servant, who is a demon he's made a pact with. Like, there is no romantic tension. There's no romance between the two. In fact, at some point, the demon's going to eat this dude's soul. But they are crammed together. Like, it is, like, in the anime, like, they also, because when they do anime, they like to hint at these things to get interest in the show. So they'll do things that cause awkward moments. But when it comes to it, one of the things that I've thought about and it's come to mind of an intimate relationship, it would definitely have to be, I think what I said when you brought this topic up, is Han and Chewie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Han, for the most part, shows that he's not an emotionally accessible person, but yet he has these very deep and intrinsic moments with Chewie. Like, he, for one, he's the only person that really understands Chewie, and mm-hmm. Chewie seems to understand him intrinsically without speaking the same language. And that's another thing that I think that is a key to a lot of these relationships, is that they can understand one another a lot of times without even speaking.
Yeah.
Like, they can tell by how someone moves, talks, or how they respond to someone else, if they're upset or if something's bothering them. And it's these nonverbal cues that shows you the strength of their bonds.
Mm.
And Han and Chewie, like, that to me, like, their backstory, I think would make a wonderful thing to explore, like how they got together.
Did you not see Solo?
I have not watched Solo yet.
Oh, watch Solo. You'll be happy.
Is it worth it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's really good.
I really enjoy it. It's not, because it's not part of like the full timeline, it's kind of like, you know, it's just a side story, but it's like reuniting with old friends, and it's really sweet.
As someone who never read enough of the, who never read any of the Extended Universe novels, I know there's some stuff in there that angered some of the diehard fans because it wasn't exactly like it was written on page 308 of this obscure novel that came out 20 years ago that you didn't read, and that doesn't match what was written on page 266 of this even more obscure novel that was only released in Panama that you had 7 minutes to get before the sea container fell into the ocean, but because you didn't read it, you're not a true fan, so you don't know that Chewie's real name is not so you got it wrong, and the movie's horrible because they got it wrong. Oh my God, burn everything down. Stop it. Stop it right now. So I hate those fans.
Release. If I had this drop in, that was when I would play T. Morris's classic, Release the Fury.
So I hate those fans, and I haven't read those books, and I know there's a lot of people that are mad at the movie Solo. I enjoyed all of it.
Yeah.
Jay, one thing that actually both of you, one thing that you might really enjoy is that there's one of the pivotal characters in the in the movie is a trophy collector, and there's a scene at the end of the movie where you're in his trophy room, and he's got trophies all around. They're all from other movies. Like, yeah. The golden idol from Raiders of the Lost Ark is on the shelf, but everything in that room is an Easter egg to a different movie.
There's a crystal skull. Yeah, it's well, fantastic.
I saw the trailer for the movie, and I was like, yeah, Childish Gambino is Lando Calrissian. Like, this movie can't be bad. Like, there's just no way.
He steals the show.
He
I'll
was
tell you
really,
that. Yeah.
Really, really good.
And
I heard
honestly,
there was a cloak closet, like a cape closet.
Yes, yes, there was. There was a cloak room.
Like, and I feel like I feel like Billy Dee Williams has that in real life.
likely. If not cloaks, they're smoking jackets.
Next to like a wall refrigerator full of Colt 45, like he just has a lifetime supply.
Are you kidding me? At his level, it's just like a house full of draft taps. Just every room he walks into, he just pours one out the wall.
His sink pours Colt 45.
So, yeah, I mean, Solo just adds more to that, and there's other intimate friendships in there, including, you know, Lando. You were talking about how Han, he's not emotionally available, and yet Chewie always knows exactly what Han is feeling, and vice versa. And that is what's more intimate than being able to tell what someone who's so closed off is feeling and what they need.
I feel like Chewie is like the best friend everybody needs.
Oh, everybody wants a Chewie.
And, right. You know, their relationship started off with, and, you know, they always talk about, you know, the life debt that they never really explain until the movie that, you know, why Chewie owes Han this life debt. That life debt has been repaid 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 times over. But why is Chewie still around? Well, because they're friends.
Yeah. Yeah. They're family.
Yeah.
It's a very sweet friendship, and I do have something from Heath Fowler when we were talking about this in the Mixed Nutcase group on Facebook. That's facebook.com/group/nuttybites. He says, where is it? I'm sorry. I thought I had it open. I'm totally with you on Han and Chewie. I just can't resist the urge to make the dumb joke that, great topic. I admit, I'm pretty sure at least one of those pairings is romance, and he was hinting at Han and Chewie. And then he said, he was totally with us, but he can't resist the urge to make dumb jokes by going for the least likely pairing there because I'm very immature. Han might cheat on Leia, but we all know Chewie would never cheat on Mala. So, Han and Chewie, I think, it's also something that growing up, at least for many of us, it's something that it was like an example of a friendship.
Oh, definitely.
You know, this is an example of how friends behave, even if they aren't always well-behaved people.
I have the ultimate one if you want to talk about friends that we grew up with.
Oh, yes.
Bert and Ernie.
Bert and Ernie, yes. And people are always trying to make them a thing.
Right, and then they had to come out with an announcement. The Children's Television Workshop had to come out with an announcement to state that they were not gay and that it was okay for your children to watch this because the sexuality thing wasn't in it. I never saw that when I was a kid. To me,
yeah, that's...
That was the dream. That was the dream of being a kid. Was living with your best friend.
Well, that's also why they ended up sleeping in separate beds because originally they used to sleep in the same bed. And
did they really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, when you were 5 or 6, yeah, you had sleepovers. You'd sleep over with your friends, yeah, and that was completely fine. And you know that was sort of like the ultimate dream of a young kid was to live with their best friend and, you know, sleep in the same bedroom and have dinner together all the time. And it was just what we wanted in a friendship, and I never saw it, and nobody in my family ever saw it as anything sexual. It's just that was that was uncalled for. But yeah,
to me, they were kids. They were just
Bert and Ernie were the two farthest things from a gay couple that I've ever seen. That never crossed my mind. Like it never crossed my mind until I was much older and saw the internet. Because again, the internet is a hive of scum and villainy.
nice throat callback.
But no, like seriously, like they just like honestly, like, and if you look at the entire cast of Sesame Street, like Bert and Ernie are the only two that are that close. Like,
yeah,
like they're only two that are that close that don't.
Snuffy and Bird. They're closer than Snuffy and Bird.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Bird.
Oh, Bird. But yeah, I mean, like, and you're right. I just found photographic evidence. They used to share a bed. I do remember them being in the same tub and things like that, which is what you do growing up. And honestly, if you grow up thinking like, you know, I might have thought that Bert was gay, but they're still kids, you know, and to me, they weren't in a relationship with each other. Now, granted, that has been used for great comedy fodder, and their relationship in the street is heartbreakingly good. But
Bert is not gay. He might be autistic. He's not gay.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not going to put those labels on a kid. I'm going to let Bert self-identify. But if you're gay growing up and you need Bert to be gay or you need Ernie to be gay, that's okay too. But that's just not, to me, I thought they were my age, you know? I thought they were kids.
And look, if we didn't get those two in a bathtub together, we would have never got Rubber Ducky. Yeah. So.
Exactly.
They're exactly. Yes. Rubber Ducky. It's all, look.
So I believe it's the Lazy River at Sesame Place. There's nothing like going down the Lazy River at Sesame Place and hearing Rubber Ducky playing over the loudspeakers.
Aww.
Just saying. I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews, and any excuse to go to Sesame Place was
a
good excuse.
You get rent kids.
Yes. I get to have them for fun and then bring them home wet and full of sugar.
Kind.
Yeah, don't let YouTube land. Don't let people tell you, oh, that whole thing about giving kids candy doesn't hype them up. Bull hockey. I gas up my nephews and nieces when I send them back to my sister all the time. It's great. And
don't worry, kids. There's no sugar in Red Bull. Have some.
Guzzle these Snickers. Guzzle the Snickers or this bag of Skittles, kids. It's fine.
I dropped these pixie sticks into this bag of M&Ms. Don't worry, it'll be fine. Just keep eating.
And all of our relatives are now going, we're never letting you babysit again.
Oh, my relatives. Hooray! My relatives know exactly what happens. When I show up with 24 cupcakes and I'm like, hey, I made these for your daughter. Let's all eat them now. It's good times. So, Melissa, you had a pretty specific pairing, because a lot of the pairings we've been talking about so far have been guys. You had some ladies that you wanted to talk about.
I have a couple, but before I do that, I wanted to add one from childhood that we've... Yeah. I don't know if there's slash about this. I probably don't want to know, but Pooh and Piglet.
Oh, yes.
Look, Pooh, it's the Piglet. Internet. Look, the internet.
Okay, there's definitely something somewhere, but I'm not going to go.
Rule 34 says it's a thing, but Pooh and Piglet are, oh, so heartwarming.
Mixed Nutcases, you know Rule 34 is a thing. Okay, the internet. Okay, Mixed Nutcases, you know Rule 34 is a thing. You know we have a Facebook group. I need to see some... Well, it has to be PG-13. I need to see some censored, some like Japanese anime mosaic style drawings of Pooh and Piglet.
Don't.
Or my life is not complete.
Be careful what you wish for, okay?
Look, if they can make slash fiction about Megatron and Starscream, there's Pooh and Piglet.
Do as I command.
But Pooh and Piglet are, you know, we've got a great example of two people that they take care of each other. And Tech, we were talking about this before about how finding a good partner is about completing one another and help exactly. being there for the needs that your partner has. And Piglet is very anxious, and Pooh is able to help Piglet calm down and center himself and feel brave. And Pooh is a little bit of a daydreamer, and Piglet is really able to be there to, ground Pooh and make him look at the world around him and kind of see reality. Is that a fair assessment?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at it, right? Like, yes, Pooh has Piglet has anxiety, but without that anxiety, Pooh kind of doesn't see the threat in things mm-hmm. that he does.
No.
Yeah.
He doesn't see the danger of it.
Pointed to things.
Yeah. And I think that, there's also a lot of really nice affirming of one another. They're constantly telling each other that they love them, that they're their favorite people in the world. I mean, Pooh is always saying very nice things about Piglet, and Piglet says very nice things about Pooh. And it's really nice to have that kind of an example growing up that, yes, being affectionate is also complimenting your friends and telling them what they mean to you.
And it's normal and it's appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. And Pooh and Piglet, I love them.
Mm. Okay, so I do have one because we have talked about mostly men. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there are so many pairings. It's yes. so easy to find examples of men. So I have two. One of them is both girls, and that's Diana Barry and Anne Shirley in Anne of Green Gables. Now, I have to say, but when I asked some friends in other groups for examples, I got jumped on for using them as an example because of various points of view about whether or not Lucy Maud Montgomery meant Anne to be bi or gay or anything like that. I do not believe that was her original intent. I do believe that there are interpretations of the story where you can totally see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that was her original intent.
I also...
And even if it was, they're 13.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I also think that... even if Anne is attracted to the same gender, that does not mean she's attracted to Diana.
No.
Yeah, and I think that they're...
language that Anne uses when she's like, oh, give me your tresses so I'll remember you forever. We're going to be bosom friends until we die. Partly you're supposed to be laughing at her lofty language.
Yes.
And partly she was a romantic. She romanticized everything. I mean, she would look in the mirror and talk to her reflection as if that was her best friend.
Yep. I agree. That's a great one. And that's another one that some of us may have grown up with. Some of us maybe not. And there's nothing, I think that people read a lot into children sometimes.
I agree. I don't think it's wrong to. I think people see what they need to see.
Mm-hmm. A big one that happens often is, and I do want to address this. So there is a term on the internet called wincest. And wincest is the slash fiction about Sam and Dean from Supernatural. Now, I think the reason that wincest exists, aside from the fact that there are no female characters, so there's, you know, I mean, yes, we can debate there's some female characters, but come on, the show is about two boys, and when they add in regular characters, they tend to be men.
And so, if you're a female who's ever in a relationship with a Winchester, you die.
Yeah, there's so, that too.
Pretty much, yeah.
So if you want to, you know, write a, you know, fan fiction and you want to include a romance, you don't really have other options. You know, the two main characters are brothers. Is he in love with his car? I mean, yes, we know that, but you know what I mean. But I think the other thing is that this is an example of a very intimate relationship, and people think, well, if a man is having these kinds of feelings, it has to be romantic. That when a man gets emotional, it has to be with a partner. And I think that's one of the problems with our society, that we seem to think that emotional needs for men must be met by romantic partners. And that's my belief as to why wincest is a thing, that people can't understand that. I mean, they're siblings. It should be very easy for them to have an intimate relationship.
You know,
I knew the Winchesters would come up. There's a couple of others. There's a couple other television couples that I know are probably going to pop into someone's mind at some point. But one of the reasons why I think the Winchesters are not only a good example of this, but also a bad example of this, is because of their codependence.
Oh, yeah.
If you've ever watched Supernatural and you know the stories that go on, there are times when these two could have saved the world, universe, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And been good.
I think they're recording it this week, so we can say Supernatural Idiot Cast. Yeah, the series finale you're covering this week. They should have just done it. Let Sam die.
And that's the thing. They cannot be without each other. Their relationship has gotten so intrinsically entwined with one another. They cannot be without the other. There are examples throughout the show where each brother has had a chance to be without the other.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Sam gets, I think, two or three before Dean gets his, and they all collapse because they fall back into this old habit of being around one another. And it shows you the kind of the extremes of how that can go.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, you can talk about, well, they don't want the show to end, blah, 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 blah. But if you're just looking at it from a strictly plot-driven
or focus. Character-driven, yeah.
Yeah, character-driven focus. These two have a savagely negative codependence.
Well, and a lot of intimate relationships are codependent. They're not all healthy.
Oh, absolutely.
And a good example of a not healthy one? Mm-hmm. Well, I should say it's healthier mm-hmm. in the written form, but much less healthy in the movie form, and that's Sherlock and Watson.
Yeah, 100%.
In any incarnation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the books are far healthier, but the movie, like, it is, like, with Robert Downey Jr., it's like, Watson has a wife. Like,
mm-hmm.
He's got a wife. He spends more time with Sherlock than his own freaking wife.
Well, that's true in the books, too.
I really didn't like those movies. It is true in the books.
Yeah,
I really didn't like those movies.
They were action. It was hard for me because it was called Sherlock Holmes, and there were a few pieces that I was like, yeah, but it wasn't my home.
I think I hated the movies so much because the TV show was just so bloody good.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, okay. My only problem with the TV show, my only problem with Mr. Cumberbatch, can we teach him how to emote? At any point
well,
in time.
Well, that's actually why he's perfect for Sherlock, because Sherlock is very closed off and holds his emotions in unless he's high.
Which is, yeah, and also why he was also the perfect casting to play Alan Turing in The Imitation Game.
Oh, he was so good.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
I need to see that. I need to see that.
You really need to see that movie. That's good. It is really, really good.
But in the books, I mean, Watson has a wife. He actually has two wives named Mary, and they're different wives. He's much more interested in his relationship with Holmes, and that's much more intimate. His wife is just his wife. I think the best romantic relationship we see for Watson in any of the adaptations or anything is actually in the BBC TV series, because he actually cares about Mary, and then Sherlock starts caring about Mary. That's kind of the best. But in every other incarnation, it's Holmes is number
She's
one.
She's really just there to say, "Oh, honey, sure, go off with your friend."
Yeah, yeah, or to be a reason here, why Watson needs money. Yeah, yeah, and Holmes is uninterested in women. There is only one woman that he's ever been interested in at all, and it's not even a sexual attraction.
It's not romantic. It's because she outwitted him.
Yeah, it's his
exactly.
mom.
Intellectual.
Yeah.
The one thing, as I was going through some other pairings in my head, and I hope you do a lightning round so I can talk about
absolutely
this. There's a trilogy of three relationships in my head that I want to talk about, but that they're all same sex, because for some reason in all of our storytelling we can't do a guy girl friendship pairing without playing the will they won't they game.
I actually have one. That isn't a will they won't they, it's just a friendship.
Okay.
Veronica Mars and Wallace Fennell.
All right, yeah, that's a, there's
also
very few.
Elliot and Margot in Magicians.
I haven't seen that, but we've got Mal and Zoe, which is one of the few that you don't have a
in sci-fi.
One.
Very, very rare.
Very rare. Yeah, but so, and that's one of our frustrations.
Okay, so my point is thing is that as a rule we don't do this,
right?
And it's annoying.
This is true.
Yes.
It's this idea, but that has now leaked into modern culture. It is leaked into all kinds of things where guys and girls can't be friends unless there's relationship and a relationship tension. It's now even gotten to the point where certain politicians who cannot be named will not have meetings with women unless his wife is present, because it's inappropriate.
Yes. I wonder who you're talking about.
They got caught. It's because they got caught.
No, that's not who we're talking
about.
Not
that guy.
Different guy.
The other
guy. Much more repressed. So who are you going to mention, your same-sex pairing there?
I don't know which one to talk about first. So let's go right for the big one. Odo and Quark from Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a big one.
That's a big one.
Now, the thing is that their relationship is incredibly incredibly complicated, because one is a smuggler and criminal mastermind. The other guy's the cop trying to stop him. But there's a level of respect and a level of friendship that neither is allowed to admit, because they're antagonists. They play these roles, these personas. I can't like cops. I'm a crime lord. I can't like criminals. I'm a cop. But at the heart of it, there's a respect for each other, and there's an unwritten set of rules in their relationship.
And how many times do they help each other with interpersonal relationships?
Right, because and that's the whole thing. It's, if you help me with this, I'll ignore that load of crystals that you're going to bring in, and I know that you're doing this thing, and I'm going to let you do it because I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in stopping the six other scams you've got going on at the time. And then they go, oh, well, okay, I guess he got me. And then
what you just described, which just hit me like a ton of bricks and it shouldn't have. Picard and Q. Those two, as adversaries, know each other. Like, Q knows Picard better than Riker. And it's, which is why anytime we get Q and Picard having intellectual back and forth.
Damn it, Q.
Exactly. That's because they understand each other on an intellectual level that not many people can mess with when it comes to Picard.
All made better by the fact that the actors don't like each other.
No, and they try to out-chew the scenery from one another. Like, it's just like,
The other ones I wanted to talk about very quickly are Londo and Jakar from Babylon 5.
Yes. Very similar.
Yes.
So many sci-fi deep cuts.
And one that's a little different but still needs to be discussed because the actors understood it differently than the rest of us did would be Dr. Bashir and the tailor. I forget.
Garrick
the tailor. So the idea that the actor playing Garrick thought that they were in a relationship would play it really, really gay.
Mm-hmm.
And
he thought he was, you know, grooming Bashir to be his boyfriend.
Right. He thought that that was the role the character was going, and without any direction, he just started playing his character as gay and started playing up this relationship and did such a good job that they had to come in and give him a love interest to sort of stop the rumors that this is where the story was going. Oh, it isn't? I thought that's where we were going the whole time.
No chemistry whatsoever.
Oh, none. It's a little weird and creepy. I do have to mention also, Shane brought it up, but I'm sure... the other Shane would be very upset if we didn't mention John Steed and Emma Peel. And that is a male-female relationship where there was never any hanky-panky. There was never, and I'm using hanky-panky because of the era. And I'm not talking about the Uma Thurman movie. I'm talking about the classic series, you know, because Diana Rigg was amazing in that, and we all love Emma Peel, but there are these two spies, and they're working together, and they're dependent on one another, and they have a very close relationship, but they are not Agent 99 and Agent 86. They are not a couple.
As a couple, I call them 185.
Yes. And yes, Steed is a bit older than Emma Peel. We've got David Grizzly Smith in the chat. Welcome. I guess I'm just used to Hollywood not caring about age, especially when the man is older. David did ask, he says, we don't have stories about male and female friendships without implied sex. Then when we talk about male and male friendships, we wonder if there's a sex thing. So is it the writers or the readers? And I think often it's the readers, and sometimes it's the writers. But
my last one I want to talk about is definitely an example of the readers and not the writers.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so no, the one I'm going to bring up now. Okay, so it's a great example of a friendship is Goose and Maverick from Top Gun. Okay.
Yes.
So Maverick is a ladies' man. Goose is married with a kid, and you know, in a great committed relationship. The two of them are very close, intimate friends. You know, they're the crew of an F-14 Tomcat. They have to have this very close relationship because the two of them make this fighter jet work, and they require this level of bond and communication to extract the maximum performance from their airplane when they're flying against MiG-28s that don't really exist. They're just black painted F-5s, but who cares?
Release the fury!
Unleash the fury, but it'll MiG-28s. Oh my god. Anyway, and you know, there's a scene in this movie where they go play shirtless, oiled up beach volleyball. Which is totally innocent and totally not part of the sexual awakening of more than one member of our audience. Hugh, I'm looking at you.
Well, and I'm also thinking of somebody we podcasted with and unfortunately lost that episode. Yes.
Right. So, yeah, and then he goes, oh, well, that scene was so gay. Why was that scene gay? It's a bunch of guys playing volleyball. Why did you make it gay? Why did the reader infer something that the writers didn't intend? So a lot of it, I think, is us.
Yeah, and David says, why do you think they called him Goose?
Oh, boo.
Yes, I love it.
You know what? You could have left that low-hanging fruit right there on the tree.
Why?
Right?
Why? It's so much fun.
Goose and low-hanging fruit. Womp, womp, womp.
But yeah, like there are some, you know, when it's the writers, I think it's more often that they're forcing relationships where they don't have to be relationships. And when it's the readers, I think it's off. And those are normally the writers are doing it with het couples generally. And when it's the readers, it's same sex couples because we want it, or we're confusing intimacy with sex.
you know, there's a couple of things I want to talk about here. First, one of the things I think is the it's not a problem, but it's extrapolation, because we don't see same-sex couples prominently on television and in our media. We don't get it. We just don't.
No. And speaking of that, the latest season of Dirk Gently.
Yes.
There's a gay relationship in it that is just part of the story.
Yeah.
And they just mentioned, oh, yeah, by the way, that's his boyfriend. Okay. And the rest of the cast just kind of shrugs and goes along with it. The series ends with a romantic kiss between the pair as they're finally reunited. And it's wonderful. And I was shocked, not at the fact that there's a gay couple kissing on my TV, because really, who cares?
Yeah, but that it was not a big deal, and it was just part of the tapestry.
It was just part of the show. It wasn't.
Yes, you knew.
It wasn't done to. It wasn't done to titillate. It wasn't done for shock value. It wasn't done to horrify. It was just part of the world that they built.
Yeah, and in that show, season one. You watch the developing of an intimate friendship between Dirk and his assistant Todd, and it's really touching how they become friends and need each other. But then in season two, as you were pointing out, is that intimate relationship between Todd and his sister.
Yes.
Which is Amanda. Just Amanda. Yeah, it's amazing. And if you haven't seen Dirk Gently, watch the series. It's fantastic. I can't say enough good things.
And you guys hit the nail on the head, right? Like, mind you, I would like to say that anime did it first with a wonderful little show. It's not even little anymore. It's iconic. Yuri on Ice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yuri on Ice was a show about a male figure skater who is overcoming some problems. He got a coach. Not a coach, but it was another figure skater, an older figure skater. And things happen, and by the end of the series, those two share a romantic kiss, and it's to my knowledge and most of the internet's knowledge, it's the first open non-hentai, non-etchy male-on-male kiss that is not used to titillate. It is literally them expressing how they feel about one another,
and it's not in a mainstream anime, not in like a niche sort of a thing like you were mentioning.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny
because Yuri on Ice is massive. It's all over the place.
Yeah. Here's the funny thing: it's kind of a shonen sports show because it's about
figure skating.
It's about figure skating. But somehow they make this wonderfully woke, to quote the kids, relationship between these two characters. And it's not played for laughs. It's not done. It's literally there for what it is. And I think that's part of the problem, and two, the answer. We don't see this on TV. We just don't. And especially in America, because America has a weird concept of things that they can show graphic detail of versus what they pay attention to.
George Martin has a quote about that. Yep. He says, you know, I fear for a society that is more comfortable watching an axe go into a head than a penis go into a vagina.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just witnessed me and Tex bond. I was about to go to that quote.
Well, there's a reason why we introduced you two as very intimate friends. All jokes aside, because we do often make those jokes, which, you know, again, is pretty unfair of us. But one of the things that can frustrate me is, that we don't see enough examples of different kinds of relationships. So David Grizzly Smith in the chat is talking about how, so in a lot of TV shows, especially workplace shows, and you've got men and women, it ends up becoming a hot swap of who's dating who, or everybody eventually gets paired up, right?
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory, Friends, Bones, you know, any of these things.
How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother. Yeah, everybody's got to date everybody in the show because, well, why would we introduce new characters, you know? And David's telling me, and now I have not watched many episodes of this, but he says that Criminal Minds has a lot of seriously hot people and tons of non-sexual male-female relationships in a workplace. And that show's been going on forever.
But, oh, thank you. whoever this person is. Oh,
oh, you need to be friends with David. He's awesome. He posts a bear picture every day.
The fury, because screw Criminal Minds.
Oh, no.
That show does the will they, won't they so hard between, oh, God, what's his name? He's that gorgeous light-skinned black guy, Shamar Moore, and the plus-size actress who plays the
yes, the character that Mildred cosplays. I can't remember her name.
They do the will they, won't they with them so hard, so hard that it drives me mad.
Didn't they eventually hook up? I think I had heard that.
No, they didn't. They consciously put into the show that he had a girlfriend, she had a boyfriend, to the point that he gets shot, is in her home recovering, takes a shower, comes out as Shamar Moore in a towel, and she's like, oh, nope, not happening. Bull hockey. This is the problem with that whole intimate relationship thing. Sometimes reality is stranger than fiction. No one's going to avoid Shamar Moore in a towel. I'm super straight, and I would.
I don't know about super straight. You're straightish.
Like, you get me between a Shamar Moore and Idris Elba sandwich, I'm all about it. Like, it's
throw in a dusting of Mike Coulter, and we're never getting Jason back. He went to the gays, and it was done.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, they sometimes go the opposite direction where they try to force feed you a relationship that is supposed to be non-romantic, and it just doesn't work. Those two characters from day one have flirted and become so close.
They have such awesome chemistry.
Exactly. And the people they try to force them with, they have none. It's like watching freaking Anakin Skywalker in the prequels.
I'm dying here because there's so much nerd rage going on, and Tech and I are like, okay, we don't watch this show.
The only thing I can think of is that this sounds like the exact opposite of another show. You know, this tease out the will they, won't they is the exact opposite of all the Sense8 I've watched, because Sense8 is they did, they're doing, and they're going to do it again, but all going to do it with each other. All over the place. It is the exact opposite of the teasing game. It's, you want to watch softcore boffing on a show of all kinds of crazy messed up sexualities? Well, guess what? We're doing it. Yeah. We're doing it again, and we did it for three seasons.
Three seasons. It's two and a half. I don't know. Anyway, it's. You know what? Those are intimate relationships that everyone's having sex in. and there's no way around it. But that's okay. That's you come for Sense8 for a certain thing, and it's not, you know, completely platonic relationships.
So I wanted to bring something up since we've been edging around it, and we've tried to find examples of male-female intimate relationships. But one of the problems is that most of the ones that we see, one of the partners in the friendship is gay.
Yeah.
But it is a trope.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. You totally just, again, like a like bricks upon my dome. And this is coming from the anime guy. We didn't mention the major in Bateau. Like,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, even like, Tech, do you want to explain your favorite scene? So major
which
and
one? The one from the one from the movie or the one from the TV show?
You don't talk about that movie.
No. He's talking about the good movie,
the animated movie. Okay.
Yeah.
No. There's because they've been joking about them being in a relationship, but neither is interested. And there's a lot. There's a lot of hinting that the major is gay, and there's a lot of that that has to do with her cybernetics and how she interacts with other women, and it works better in same sex pairings. So for all intents and purposes, the major's gay. But there's been this. There was a running gag in. What was that two-season show called? It was the...
You mean Standalone Complex?
Yeah, Standalone Complex. There was this running gag about how Bateau I was always trying to get a hold of her underwear and always trying to get into a relationship with her. And at one point, there's something going on at the major's house. She's been kidnapped. There's this huge sort of like a rolling gunfight. He finds himself without a firearm. He's rummaging through her house, and he goes to her dresser in the bedroom, and he opens the drawer, and he looks down at all of her neatly folded underwear, and he goes, "Huh, I knew I'd find it." And he reaches under the drawer and pulls out the gun that was taped under the drawer. He's like, "All right, good." Then he runs back out into the gunfight.
Yeah, exactly. Because even when they make those jokes, it's completely platonic. So David has brought up NCIS and saying that even with some of the sexual tension, they're able to make it, you know, not one of those hot swapping things. And he says one of the characters, Tim and Abby, by the way, NCIS is the Abby show because it's the only point to watch it.
Yay, Abby.
Tim and Abby actually slept together early in the series, and Abby has a great line about that. Tim asks Abby, "So can a guy and a girl be friends?" "Well, of course they can. And not have sex?" "Why wouldn't they have sex?"
All right, fair.
Because Abby is awesome, and she's like, "Yeah, you can have sex with your friends. That's no big deal."
Is this a show with the goth loli type character?
Yeah, that's, yes. Abby.
Yeah, that's
who
Abby.
Is based on the actress's actual style and everything.
She has a degree in forensics, by the way. Like, it's pretty great.
She's pretty
like,
amazing.
Watching her roast the show for its hand waving is amazing.
But
and she sings in a punk band.
Yes. So that's a Belisarius production, which reminded me of another Belisarius production, Quantum Leap. We've got Sam Beckett and Al.
Absolutely.
And
I thought you were going to say Jag.
No, I didn't watch enough Jag. I don't think I've watched any Jag.
I watch way too much of Jag. I don't know if you guys noticed, like, there was a thing on Facebook, there was a comedian who talked about how, like, a lot of black people, they kind of grew up the same, where, like, you grew up in your, like, aunt or your grandma's house, and you couldn't touch the TV, like, whatever she was watching, like, that was what you were watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Touched by an Angel, Jag.
Oh.
Yeah.
Highway to Heaven has to be in there, too, right?
Oh, my God, bruh. It's The Young and the Restless, the Bold and the Beautiful, bruh. I got it all. Like, it was hard for me as a child. I'm like, can we just please watch Nick Jr. for, like, 2 seconds?
But I mean, like,
but,
you think
but
that
Grandmama, Dragon Ball's on.
You think that Al is like,
I need
just
my soaps.
Just there as a job to help out Sam. But I mean, Sam is helping Al in even though Al is not stuck, and Al is constantly there to take care of Sam. And it's
I would argue that
one.
Al is stuck. He's just not stuck in a time thing.
Yeah, he's not stuck in a time loop. He's stuck in his own
yeah. issues.
Yeah, exactly. Man, David, I think I should have had you on. He says there's an ironic one, which I want to bring up because, you know, fat characters. Here's an ironic one. Drew Carey and Mimi, absolutely no sexual tension. And they actually end up in a, like, online relationship without knowing who each other are. And someone asked Drew, so it's basically typing with one hand. Yeah, whatever. And when they find out, it's like, yeah, no, that doesn't change anything. But they do. They start out, this goes with, like, the Q and Picard thing and the Jakar and Londo and the Quark and Odo.
They're adversaries.
Yeah, they start out as adversaries, but they end up as frenemies, and they need each other, and they want to make sure that the other person is living their best life so that they're there to challenge
them. I think a very obvious pairing.
I'm sorry, say
one
again?
One of your personal favorites, Grace and Frankie.
Oh, yes, I love Grace and Frankie. Mm-hmm. Yes, dude. Because they started out hating each other and
not a gay pairing, but started because of a gay pairing.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you know, they oh man, so many good things. And if you want to read my full thoughts on Grace and Frankie, go to Modern Creative Life and just look for Grace and Frankie. I wrote a whole essay about it and how it's affected my relationship with my mom. But
that's a brilliant essay.
Thank you.
You should all read it.
Grace and Frankie, they're and how we don't often see these kinds of intimate relationships in older people. And I love that there is this beautiful example here. I'm actually going to go to, and it's not really, oh, hang on. I just need to close this. Somebody's trying to call me and that went on the recording. That's not cool. I need to throw this out. It's not really a male female because gender's weird. But I'm going to say Cisco and Dax. I said no. Sorry.
I agree. Cisco and Dax. That's a good example.
Yeah. And, you know, Dax's gender changes sometimes.
And Jadzia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you've got.
Because I think his relationship with Curzon was very different.
Yeah. Because he's definitely. Curzon's the mentor, he's the mentee. And Jadzia. They're a little bit reversed. Yeah, they're closer to equals. And then Cisco and Ezri, he's more of a mentor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it's full circle.
There are some episodes where they talk about this. It's like, oh well, you know, you're showing a lot of affection to Jadzia, and it's only because she's hot and she's 23. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, no, that's the old man. It's yeah. You don't know the relationship that Curzon and I had, and it was sort of his relationship was with Dax was the start of their relationship, but eventually there is a relationship between Cisco and Jadzia that goes in a different relationship, especially when Jadzia starts her relationship with Worf and starts going to Cisco for relationship and marriage and marital advice.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. At that point, it's very much like he's her older brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's absolutely beautiful. By the way, if anyone was interested, I'm going to cut this out of the show, but apparently Cheryl is who was supposed to get that call. And Christina was supposed to get the call. It's Cheryl, Michelle's mom, and it's a little after 9:10, and she's getting worried about Michelle. So, Michelle, you need to get home.
Michelle, what is wrong with you? Go home.
Am I the only one who has been watched Iron Fist season 2?
We have one more episode.
I'm only up to episode 4, and Tech hasn't started it.
So
have you watched?
But we can Cage say.
Oh no! I marathoned season 2 of Luke Cage.
I'm asking Nutty.
Oh yeah, I've seen all of that.
Yeah. Luke Cage season 2 is awesome.
Because I wanted to bring up Colleen and Misty.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Daughters of the Dragon.
Ooh, you're touching.
Yes, I know it's coming. I know it. Look, Misty's got her robot hand, and Misty and Colleen are in the same show. Daughters of the Dragon is going to happen. I mean, I know enough about the comics to understand.
Here's the deal. I can't say what happens, but they throw a wrench into that dynamic.
Okay, well, shush, you didn't eat chicken.
Big one. But what I wanted to talk about was when you talked about the mentor versus the student or the senpai, mm-hmm. you know, there is part of that in season 2 of Iron Fist, and we do see some of that in the first season between Colleen and Danny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though they are a romantic relationship. Yeah.
Mind you, that comes back to haunt them in season 2. And I can't say it. I can't say anymore.
But I will say in the extended ideas, Misty and Colleen make a great intimate relationship. And from the comics, and we're getting little hints of that, Luke and Danny are awesome.
Yeah. That's because heroes for hire, bro. Heroes for hire.
Yes. And the Bacon Man is driving and listening to us. So that is awesome. Thank you for joining us. So anybody got any big ones that you want to go into before we go into a lightning round?
Oh.
Willow and Xander.
Yeah.
Willow is from what's
Buffy.
That?
From
Buffy. You don't know.
Yes, there's romantic tension, but by the end of their arc, that's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes away. A part of that is because she realizes she's gay, maybe she might be bi, but whatever. Their friendship stops her from destroying the world. Yeah, they matured, they grew out of it. Oh, Spence is in the chat. Hi, Spence.
Woo!
Yeah, and man, David, you watch a lot of shows I don't watch, but I think Melissa watched The West Wing. So CJ and Toby.
The West Wing, absolutely.
So CJ and Toby. Yeah, that's a good lightning round one. Yeah, there are so many of these friendships. And again, I think that there's we need to have more where, you know, they could be romantic, but they're not because their friendship is way deeper than that. I'm watching a new show called Please Like Me, and it's basically a guy, he discovers that he's gay, and the relationship between him and his roommate, who is also a guy, is really close, really intimate, and it is not romantic at all, which I think is awesome.
I think, you know, I talked about this earlier, but I think, you know, the lack of, you know, same-sex couples, the lack of male-female non-sexual or non-romantic couples on TV is very limited, and I think that feeds the imagination. But also, I think that people also misunderstand certain relationships, such as the teacher and the student. I can't go into why. Once you have finished season 2 of Iron Fist, we will talk about this because I have a direct quote that I want to use, but I can't. People
misunderstand.
We'll save it.
People misunderstand the dynamic between teacher and student.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I think that's true.
Because that is a wonderfully intimate connection. But when done properly, it's not romantic at all.
Yeah.
As a teacher, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one time I was actually out with Tech, and this might be a little embarrassing, but we're out with Tech, and I'm like, my head turns. I'm looking at a certain person. I'm being very vague. And I'm like, oh, look at that person. And Tech's like, that's a student. That is not hot. That's a student. I'm like, oh, okay. Turning it off. Because, you know, when you are a teacher, your students are not sexual beings to you. They shouldn't be.
Well, they shouldn't be.
There was a great joke on How I Met Your Mother, where they're like, what it's like to be in a club in your 20s. And you look at it. It's a dance club scene, and it's all these like super sexy guys and girls in their 20s all dancing together, moving in sexy outfits on the dance floor. And he goes, what it's like to be at a club in your 30s. And then it's the same scene, but they're all 8-year-olds wearing grown-up clothes dancing on the dance floor, and it's all these little kids grooving. When I look at my students, that's what I see, is just these like these little kids wearing like grown-up sized clothes with like oversized shoes and like big hats as they sort of walk around.
It's so true.
Every now and then I get 3 of them that stack on each other's shoulders in a trench coat and try to pretend they're a grown-up, you know?
All right, so let's go into lightning round, and I'm going to start it off just with a teacher and student, Miyagi and Daniel.
Oh, very good one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Not a teacher student, but Pampuvi and Archer.
Yeah. Even though they had a dalliance, but yeah.
I'll get you one.
But Buffy and Giles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's a father-daughter thing. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. It is and it isn't.
Yeah.
And I'll hit you back with Tetsuo and Kaneda from Akira.
All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Dave Grizzly Smith says Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Nice.
Tech?
R2 and C-3PO.
Yes.
Yeah.
They 100% need each other, too.
Absolutely.
Spence says Meredith Grey and Owen from Grey's Anatomy.
Okay.
Don't watch, but Melissa gets it. and I'm going to throw out there Bruce and Alfred.
Nice.
Oh, yes, indeed.
That's real good.
can we throw out Batman and all the Robins? He has a. He's got a thing going on, but there is an intimate relationship with Tim Drake till he exploded, and all
this. Mrs. Jones got a thing going on, Robin. But no, I'll hit you with that same universe. Batman, Superman.
Yeah.
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 Kenan and Kel. Thanks, Ben.
Who did that? Who
Spence,
did that?
That's Spence.
Okay. For the other person who watches The West Wing, CJ and Toby, yeah. Josh and Sam.
Sure. I don't even know Josh and Sam. I've heard of CJ and Toby. And David Grizzly Smith says, he's my ward. No, really.
Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn.
Yeah. With their relationship. Yeah.
Right.
Harley Quinn and Black Canary.
Oof.
I love their arc.
By the way, I just, if you ever needed a reason to to read the Injustice comics.
Oh, yeah.
It is for every panel that Black Canary and Harley Quinn are together. And one in particular is the scene in Harley Quinn's in the hospital.
Yep.
Recovering.
Yep.
And she's talking to Black Canary and explains to her about the fact that she got pregnant from the Joker and he didn't even know. And she tried to be around him and he didn't even recognize that she had left to go have the baby. Oh my God. Like, it is one of the best pieces of fiction you can ever read.
So Dave Grizzly Smith says, Beavis and Butthead. I'm not sure they're emotionally available enough, but sure.
Whatever.
And Spence says, Daria and Jane. Yeah, yeah. So I hope it doesn't come back.
They're trying to remake it. I don't want it to come back.
I'm going to throw this out there. I actually turned to my wall and I am looking at some beautiful art by Claire LaFar of the Defenders podcast. And how could I forget Rocket and Groot?
Nice. Absolutely. Okay, Alex and Kara, or Supergirl, on Supergirl, they're sisters, yes. But they still have a really good relationship.
Yes, they do.
Well, dude, we'll again, stick to the same universe. Clark and Jimmy Olsen.
Yes.
I just say even Clark and Chloe in Smallville.
Oh, yeah.
We can't mention her name. So.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's, we said Chloe.
But the character is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Chloe's still great. Alison Mack. Loki and Thor.
Yes.
I feel like that is just because we want to see oiled up Tom Hiddleston and Chris Hemsworth rubbing each other. Like,
brothers.
No, I feel like that. Stop I feel it. Like that. I also see, you know what? That's the excuse every anime fan uses, because it's not my sister or it's not my brother. They're my step. Yeah,
adopted
sibling.
Doesn't, a step and adopted doesn't change.
No, because, you know, because that's what they did in, that's what they did for Sailor Moon with the outer universe, with the outer system scouts. It's like, no, they're not gay. They're cousins. Yeah. That'll get us past the North American censors.
But the whole adopted thing, it doesn't count thing, as somebody who has adopted siblings, that is always gross to me. Counts. And that's what made me stop watching Dexter. We're not having that. Spence says Spock and Kirk, but come on, there's a love triangle between Spock, Kirk, and McCoy.
Look, spoiler alert, they're effing, okay?
Okay, that's watch totally like. My thing, but whatever.
Started slash fan.
Right, if you watch Spock, Kirk, and Bones, and you realize that Bones is the reason why he's so... Are you out of your Vulcan mind? The reason why he's so grumpy is that he is the spurned lover. Yes. He is the one that has been pushed aside for the new hunky Greenwood.
Yeah, there's some good stuff there. But no, you know what? Even if there is, there's still a very intimate relationship, and you have been and shall always be my friend is probably like one line that can really evoke friendship for many of us geeks. So we're gonna count that one in
that. And of all the souls I have met, his was the most human.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're staying in this universe, Bashir and O'Brien.
Yeah, how did we not mention them? I mean, those two are like
buried in Slash.
To the point of like ruining O'Brien's marriage sometimes, which is not really a bad thing. They
also
were never
House
happy.
And Wilson.
Yes, House and Wilson, which is essentially, you know, as we've discussed
Holmes
before,
Watson,
it's Holmes and Watson.
Redressed.
Yeah.
By the way, why has that guy not played Holmes, Sherlock Holmes? Or has he in some sort of British play?
Oh, Hugh Laurie?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
oh, he could.
Oh, I totally forgot.
But only if we get Stephen Fry as Watson.
Yes!
Which, oh my God.
I was going to say, in reality, Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie are intimate friends.
Right. So does this mean we get to talk about Patrick Stewart and Sirian?
That's where I was going with this.
You did it again. You did it again.
Right.
There's that...
Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, the absolute closest of friends.
Yes.
Both in, one married, the other one in, I assume, a committed relationship, but we don't have a lot of details about his personal life. But
Which I respect, by the way.
Yes, oh, yes,
sure,
yes.
Absolutely. It's, you know what? It's none of my business what he does in his off hours or who he does it with. I just want to watch his movies.
Excellent performances. I don't care.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, like, he's been an advocate for gay rights, and his relationship is not part of that. So, like, he's a great human.
Honestly, on that note, like, the best part about it is because I think for him, and I don't know him at all, and I don't know what I'm saying, but I feel like it's his choice to. I'm a huge movie star and a theatrical, yep. Theatrical actor. I don't want to bring you into the spotlight because, again, him and Patrick Stewart, they do all kinds of awesome things together.
Yeah.
And Patrick Stewart has been in drag more than once.
Oh yeah, well he's a thespian. Yeah. I mean, come on, that just goes with the territory.
It's like. He's just like, well, you know, I do these things because it's great. You know,
and as Spence is mentioning, you know, Sir Ian got ordained so he could perform the wedding ceremony for Patrick Stewart and his wife. And I remember reading something from Patrick Stewart's wife about how she understood that when she was marrying Patrick, she was also marrying Ian, that
also,
this would be part of their lives.
Oh, that's lovely.
Also, yeah. Children, if you're listening on YouTube land, go watch Patrick Stewart high in a treehouse. It's the greatest thing you'll ever see.
Him high, trying to perfect the quadruple take.
Yeah.
With his lounge singing wife. How stereotypical could that be?
She's beautiful. But the two of them have demonstrated to the world how much love they have for each other. And it's not romantic, so far as we know. It is not sexual. It is love. It is just pure and intimate. And I'm also going to throw out there Key and Peele. If you've ever seen them interviewed, they are, you know, more than just collaborators. They are great friends.
Also, French and Saunders.
Yes.
Yes.
Key is in the new Predator movie.
Oh, cool.
Didn't know that. I just looked it up. He's in the new movie. I'm loving it. Also, you want to talk about a super intimate relationship where people, matter of fact, the best part about this relationship is they don't understand that they both understand one another.
Mm-hmm.
Killmonger and T'Challa.
Yeah.
Those two understand one another so intrinsically.
I'm not sure it's intimate, but yeah, I will say that. Yeah. And I will throw out there one of my favorite things is how T'Challa, after beating Killmonger, says he was right.
One of the reasons why I say this to this day, and I will never stop saying it, is that Black Panther is the best superhero movie on the planet, and I cannot take credit for this assertion. It's David Hayes. He told me, he goes, one of the things why I love this movie is because usually in a movie, of a hero destroys the villain. He removes everything the villain stands for and completely removes him from the body that is this movie, like a cancer. But in Black Panther, he doesn't remove anything other than the malicious intent behind Killmonger's purpose.
Yeah.
He takes up the charge that is uniting the world with the Wakanda and the Wakandan people. And then the best part on top of that is, as most people would know, T'Challa's wonderful, lovely lady can look at him, Nakia, look at him and go, I told you so. Because she was speaking
She was telling him that from the beginning. Yeah, well, always listen to Lupita. We've just got a couple more in here. House and Wilson did ride off on a motorcycle in the end. Aw, that's really cute. And I may have missed some. Any last minute lightning round suggestions here?
Fox Mulder and Dana Scully.
Yes.
Yes.
And they are not a couple.
No,
that's
and
gross.
They even made that into a joke on King of the Hill, where I remember when King of the Hill would follow the X-Files, where all of a sudden Hank Hill shows up on the TV and he goes, next up is X-Files, which, if I do believe, is about a couple that does not have sex. So enjoy that on Fox TV.
Yeah. Oh, and Spence did mention, David Gridley Smith mentioned in Enterprise, we've got Archer and Trip. Yeah, absolutely. And then...
7 of 9 and the rest of the world.
Spence said that she conceded the point about Spock and Kirk, but let's go to Voyager, and we've got Janeway and Chakotay. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one's good.
And again, I do not ship them at all, and I think it's weird when people do, but, you know, whatever floats your boat.
Harry in Paris.
Absolutely. Oh, it's the only interesting thing about poor Harry. I love Garrett Wang, but they such
he's
potential.
He's the only person worse than Jordy.
Ugh. Well... Yeah, even Malcolm and what's his name from Enterprise do better.
What yeah, but they didn't die.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg's character, Guinan, anyone in Guinan, because for some reason, she was the ultimate best friend. Like, she was like...
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I had to pick one, it would be her and Roel Aaron.
Yes.
Guinan nice. And Roel jumping on the bed.
That yes. is
enough said.
The young actresses that they picked to play the young versions of them, they were amazing.
That is the deepest cut. I think you eviscerated this podcast.
I'm gonna throw out a Deadwood one, and this might be a deep cut, but I'm gonna go with Canary Jane and Charlie Utter.
Deadwood. That's the show with the F-bombs and iambic pentameter, yes. right? Okay, yes. No, never watched.
By the way, children, if you want to watch F-bombs be done in an artistic and wonderful way, yes. watch Deadwood.
If you don't know what iambic pentameter is, but you want to nerd out on your friends, go watch Deadwood. Yeah. I told you were allowed. Tell that to your mom and dad.
If you want to see Veronica Mars get shot in the head, go watch Deadwood.
Spoiler. I rewound that. Also, lightning round. Ooh, God. It's Common and Old Guy from Hell on Wheels. There's a show on TMC. It was about the expansion out west in the railroad. But the main character and Common were the broiest of bros that ever broed, but never once had a romantic moment at all. And it's wonderful. If you have not watched Hell on Wheels, watch until Common leaves the show. Once he leaves the show, it's not good. But up until that point, it's Common's character and Bohannon. The main character's name is Bohannon. It's fan-freaking-tastic. Also, Common has the best exit from any show. He kills a bear. He fights a bear and kills it, dies in the process to leave the show.
So Grizzly says, if we're going Westerns, Wyatt Earp and Miss Kitty, I'm also going to throw in there Wyatt Earp and Hickok. Because
Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday.
Doc Holliday, that's what I meant. Not Hickok. Sorry, I was confusing people. But yeah, Wyatt Earp, different stories. And then Spence said, oh, it went away. Oh, there it is. Harold, Margaret, and Nancy. I'm not sure what that is, but I'm sure somebody's going, Nutty, it's this most awesome thing. How do you not know it? Ah,
we've watched all 84 episodes. How come you haven't seen one? Worst podcast ever.
I am going to mic drop this one. Ponyo? And whatever the kid's name is from Ponyo.
Oh, fail. Fail on the mic drop, but yes, indeed.
That's a little impact there.
Ponyo is the world's purest love story because it is a wonderful love story between six-year-olds.
Yeah, it is not romantic. Aww. It is not sexual. It is six-year-olds. It's little, and you need to watch it. I know you don't do animated, but it's The Little Mermaid told through children. It's fantastic.
Dude, if there's ever a hammer to nail, it's when Ponyo is set aside and Liam Neeson and his wife, the goddess of the world, talk to the young man and basically say, "Are you okay? Are you prepared to go with her through this whole thing? Like,
even if she loses her powers, even if you know." And he says, "I love all the Ponyos."
Right. It's savage. Fellas, if you ever want to mack on your lady, like, that is the example to follow. Like, he is the epitome of what it means to be like, yo, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you ain't got no makeup. It doesn't matter if your hair is in rolls.
Okay. You have two? All right, then we're gonna close up.
Okay, one's Harry and Hermione.
Yeah, granted.
And the other one, I'm probably the only person who's watched this show, but in the show Defiance, the sheriff, Josh, and his adopted daughter, Irissa, have a really good father-daughter relationship, even though they come together by circumstance.
Awesome. Ooh. Awesome. So, Jason, where can people find you on the internet?
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, YouTube Planny. You can always find us on the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast at TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/NerdyToMe. And, of course, you can find us on Twitter at NerdyToMePodcast. But also you can find me all over Nutty Bites because I'm nerding out. And for some reason, they keep bringing me back. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But also, Nostalgia Pilots, nostalgiapilots.com. We talk about Gundam Wing. If you love yaoi and beautiful boys doing beautiful things with beautiful boys, that's the best show. Like, it's the greatest. Like, it's fun. It's awesome.
Also, there happens to be some big giant robots in that show, yeah. If you didn't notice.
You know, yeah, yeah. You know, giant robots, because, you know, that's like the least favorite anime genre, sadly.
So, Melissa, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at bathtubmermaid.com.
Yes.
And on Twitter and Instagram at Meliss, spelled M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, and I am Miss Meliss, spelled the same way, on Facebook.
You better recognize.
And, well, we're getting to that part. We just want to thank all of the patrons. Thanks to you, you get 2 episodes a month, which means you're getting twice as many as the original intention of this podcast. And thank you to all the people who aren't patrons but are still listening. We actually dig all of you listeners. And, you know, sometimes people start talking and letting us know that they're listening. And it's like, wow, I didn't know that person listened. So thank you for joining us. Any feedback that you send is greatly appreciated. And if you don't send feedback, we love you still. But we specifically want to send some love and thanks to Big Daddy Jason. Wait, I think I know that person. Jax, our QC guy. Susanna, Andy, Beth, Dr. Beth, Justine, who is, you can find her photography on Patreon. Susan, Melissa A. Bartel, the bathtub mermaid.
Yes. Yes. All of you other patrons, bow before the bathtub mermaid. Recognize her power. The Big Daddy claims it, and you shall recognize.
Are you done?
I will totally give you a fin slap for that.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Kinsey, Ian of The Web of Queer, Harold, Patrick Scafito, check out his books on Amazon, Shane Poole of the Red Dwarf Introcast, and who's also of the chat room of almost every one of these.
Oh my God! We didn't mention the 2 main characters from Red Dwarf!
Yeah, you're right. That goes in with that whole Jakar.
The whole cast of Red Dwarf.
Yeah. Those boys are great. Absolutely. But also, thank you to Zach Mann. Thank you to Greg Larson. You can get his books online. Thank you to the Radical Geek. I can say the word geek. You'd think I could. Thank you to Stephen Pritchard. Thank you to Rich the TT. Thank you to Mike of the Redacted Files. Thank you to Ken Kennedy. And thank you to Lynette of the Bicast. Thank you so much, everyone, for helping support the podcast. And this is especially helpful for me right now. And if you want to know why, I'll talk to you about it off air. But thank you so much for all of your support and helping me bring these podcasts to you. This has been a blast. I'm going to stop. Let's say goodbye so I can stop the recording.
Bye.
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 Everybody, for everybody affected by Florence, be safe.
Yes, be safe.
I love you all.
Also, the Philippines and Hong Kong.
And yeah, everywhere that's under the weather.
Weather attacks.
It just seems weird to say under the weather. Please be safe.
Yes. Yes. This will work perfectly. We'll add a little audio here. We'll watch a movie here. We'll record here. Yes! It's alive! Alive!
No, it's not alive. It's just the Horror Fest.
But it's...
No, it's just the podcast Horror Fest at TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com.
But it is horrifying and spooky.
Well, yeah, 31 days of podcast is horrifying, but the movies are definitely up for debate, which they can do at facebook.com/nerdytome.
And we can...
No. No. End the promo. Nope, you're done.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.